Okay, hi. This is Daniel Kincses from Hungary. So my question is, could you go to the slide with the elliptic flow V2 results? So the question is, if people are still looking for like this constituent quark scaling of V2 versus transverse kinetic energy, is that still a thing or is that like past now?
Well, no, this is actually still a very important topic of research. The ultimate goal is, of course, to infer from this information the most precise measurement of the bulk and shear viscosity. And this is done really by a compilation of all experimental results. And then using a Bayesian approach. Now, what is really interesting and a bit new at the LHC compared, for instance, to the results of Rick, is that we really went to a high precision measurement of all the coefficients up to the ninth order and also their correlations. And this reveals quite some important features of the internal structure of the QGP. So these measurements will continue, and we continue in particular in the sector of charm beauty. For charm, we have good prospects to have high precision measurements in run 3 and 4. I've shown already some of the first measurements with the run 2 data. But for beauty, certainly the precision will not be sufficient, in particular if the ultimate goal is to derive a microscopic description of the interaction of heavy quarks with the QGP. And that really requires the measurement of the nuclear modification factor, so the energy loss and the flow of charm and beauty quarks. So this is what we will try to address with actually a very important upgrade. Actually, is a completely new detector that we are proposing for installation during LS4. This is called ALICE3. It was my intention to yesterday to show and talk a bit about that, but for time reasons I could not. But essentially, one of the main goals will be indeed to measure charm and beauty in detail with great precision.
Avanish Bhaskar Sharma from NICEF. So I got just one question. Yeah. So on slide 21, you stress the low material budget. Can you elaborate a bit on this? Slide 21.
21, you said?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the measurements at low PT in general, they rely, well, so this is in the context of the measurement of the thermal radiation. And as I was arguing yesterday, you see here, let me take a pointer. You see, what we would like to measure is the spectrum of the low mass of the electrons in the region, let's say, well, actually over the full, range. But for the extraction of the temperature, we are interested in mostly in the region between 1 and 3 GV or even 5 GV. The higher we go, earlier in the evolution of the system we will be able to go in terms of measurement of the temperature. And as you can see here, there is a huge background coming from electrons from the semi-leptonic decay of charm and beauty hadrons, in particular charm hadrons. So in order to subtract this background, we need to have very high precision measurement of all these charmed hadron states at in this region here. And that is a measurement that relies on the topological reconstruction of the hadrons, whether we are measuring displaced electrons or various other hadron decays. We need to reconstruct their essentially impact parameter. And when we go at this value of momentum, so that essentially is a measurement that depends on the impact parameter resolution of the vertex detector, and is mostly dominated by the spatial resolution of the detector and the low material budget. Okay, so the mass of the detector. Imagine you have a measurement that depends on the spatial resolution of the first two points of your detector. There will be a certain error due to the Coulomb scattering, and this error goes quadratic as the square root of the material budget, of the radiation length of the detector. And of course, it's also important to have the first detection layer as close as possible to the interaction point. Actually, ideally, you would not care at all about the multiple scattering if you could put your first detection layer at the interaction point, right? Because then you do not have any extrapolation error. And this will be indeed one of the features of an upgrade that well, already for the LS3, so in 2026, 2028, we are planning, well, I can show this because it's something that I find particularly innovative. There we go. So, in 2026, 2028, we will install a new detector. So that is the inner tracking system of the vertex layers that we have just installed during the second long shutdown. And we will replace it by the detector that for the first time, first of all, is a truly cylindrical. You know, normally you have a cylindrical shape approximated by planar elements. And here you have really silicon wafers that are thinned down to 30 microns and that then can be curved around the beam pipe. There will not be any other material. So that's almost the ideal detector because besides the detection layer itself, you don't have any electrical substrate, you don't have any mechanical support structure. So the silicon will be the first material encountered by the particles emerging from the interaction point. And the even more aggressive upgrade is proposed then for the LS4, so for the next decade. But then the idea is actually to put the detection layer inside the beam pipe. If we remove the beam pipe, there will be the inside in the secondary vacuum as LHCb has done, but with a completely different configuration because now we have a barrel configuration here. So there will be a detector which will be open during the ingestion of the beam where the aperture is larger. And once the beam has reached the nominal energy and so it's much more squeezed, then it can be closed, reaching a distance, a radial distance from the interaction point of 5 millimeters. And that will yield an impact parameter resolution, a pointing resolution at the level of 5 to 10 microns for particles down to a few hundred MeV, which as you can imagine, it becomes quite crucial for the measurement of, in particular, of charmed hadrons. What we are trying to address here is measurement of double and triple charm states.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Eric. So I was wondering, I think it's great that we have a dedicated heavy ion collider for the LHC, and I was wondering what trade-offs you had to make in the designing of the project to, or not even trade-offs, but, you know, like if you had to choose specific hardware that is specific for lead-lead collisions and not something for a proton-proton collision, how that went.
So that's a very good question because, I mean, you're essentially asking the complementarity between the different LHC detectors and what makes at least unique for the measurement of the heavy ion collisions. Well, the first point is that ALICE put the focus really on the measurement at very low transverse momentum. This required the choice of detectors which are a bit slower, but also with a much lower material budget. And the other important point is the particle identification. I mean, you were asking yesterday to Sophia, you know, what about the timing layer, right? In Atlas and CMS, the main motivation is to resolve pileup. Okay, then of course you will also use it for particle identification, but the main motivation is pileup. In ALICE, it's only motivated by particle identification. And we use all possible techniques, right? I mean, we do particle identification using the energy loss in a silicon, in the time projection chamber. We use the transition radiation in the transition radiation detector, the time of flight, which is very important, and so on. We have, also cause calorimetry, a photon spectrometer, and et cetera. So if you ask me where is ALICE unique, is it really at low momentum? I think in CMS Atlas will not be able to do measurements, at the GV or few hundred MeV scale. You also have PT cutoffs, which actually cut off much earlier at around the 3 GV. So ALICE really focused on that region because, as you have shown, the bulk of particles produced by a thermalized medium are generated in that region. Okay, then of course there is a great interest also for highly energetic partons, jets. Okay, and that give us access to a different scale of the QGP, the quasi-particle structure. But altogether, there is a very nice complementarity. And actually, for the upgrade program, both for now RAN 3 and RAN 4, but also for the next decade, we typically have set up a task force to really look at the complementarity of the program that can be addressed by the different experiments.
At the freeze-out of the quark-gluon plasma, do you observe states which are beyond the baryons, like pentaquarks or globules or anything?
So we are very much absolutely. So we are very much interested in the measurement, for instance, of the X3872. That again has to be measured at low transverse momentum. That is where we would expect. There is a CMS measurement, but I think it is down to 15 GV. So we would really need to measure it again in the few GV momentum scale. And that is quite interesting because depending on the nature of that structure, I may mention now the X3872, but I could take any other of the multi-quark states, the production yields in heavy ion collisions should be at least an order of magnitude apart, depending on whether they are compact tetraquark states, for instance, or molecular states. Therefore, we plan to perform those measurements, and this will be complemented by other measurements of the hadron-hadron correlation in the, for instance, in the Chalmers sector. For instance, you can measure the interaction potential between two meson and estimate, therefore, the probability that they form a bound state. And therefore, all this information will tell us precisely on the nature of some of the multi-quark states that have been recently discovered.
Hi. I wanted to ask if you could comment on how much, since the run-3 is approaching and before there was the long shutdown too, if you could comment on how much the COVID pandemic has affected the preparation of ALICE and how did we, as a collaboration, overcome the difficulties?
All right, well, so indeed, the pandemic had an impact on all experiments. Now, the and this has led to a delay of about 1 year. ALICE was actually in a very fortunate situation because at the start of the pandemic, the main components, the new components of the ALICE detector were already at CERN. So with a relatively small team of people, mostly engineers and technicians, even during the pandemic, even during the 3 months of CERN closing, we could continue our activities. And as a matter of fact, we have completed the installation of our upgrades last summer. So well before the closing of the LHC tunnel, and so we had quite a long period of time to perform the commissioning of our detectors and let me touch wood, get ready for the upcoming collisions. But psychologically, I mean, it is true that we're still recovering. You know, people are not used anymore to travel, to come to CERN, to participate to meetings in person, to take part in the operation of the detector. There is a certain resistance that we still see. It will take time, but we are happy that eventually we can hold, again, collaboration meetings in person. And we see the great enthusiasm of young PhD students coming to CERN for the first time, for instance.
Yes, one of the effects that would unequivocally show that we have to do with a quark gluon plasma is the effect that I asked you about already yesterday, the chiral magnetic effect. From a theory point of view, it's really beautiful, and I just wonder how much is going to be done about it.
Yes. So, indeed, now, I don't know if everyone is familiar with that, but essentially, let's say the QCD ground state may have non-trivial topological configurations with net chirality. And in the presence of a very large magnetic field, these chiral domains may induce essentially separation of the charges along the direction of the magnetic field. Now, in heavy ion collisions, there is a huge magnetic field that is generated when the two heavy nuclei cross. So the nucleons that do not participate, that escape the collision, and they proceed in the longitudinal direction, the generating magnetic fields that are possibly larger than 10 to the 20 Gauss, so huge, okay? The largest magnetic fields ever measured. And this should indeed produce, if a chiral magnetic effect exists, it should be measurable. So we performed these measurements in Reading Run 1 at 2.76 TeV. We repeated the measurement with the data sample at 5 TeV. We see a signal which is compatible with the chiral magnetic effect, but the background is still too large. Actually, we are still in the process of precisely determining the background. But yesterday, with some optimism, I told you that, again, run 3 and run 4 should really put us in the position, certainly of making significant progress, you know, without promising anything. But we have significantly improved detector in terms really of the performance of the measurement of particle correlations, but also the statistics, which for this type of measurement will increase by essentially two order of magnitudes. So it's huge. So it's really a big deal, okay? So we really hope, but thank you for asking the question. I believe that there are other signals which are unambiguous signatures of the QGP, but certainly yes, this yes. would be a major discovery.
This effect has been measured also in solid state.
Yes. Yes.
Setups. Yeah. And so it's not exclude. Well.
Yeah.
Certainly has been seen elsewhere. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Hi, I'd like to have another question. So you mentioned a lot of different detector upgrades. Also, for example, this TPC gating, changing the gating grid to a continuous readout. And all of this means that you are able to record much more data than before, right? And then how much did this affect or change the trigger configuration of the experiment?
Well, essentially, ALICE becomes a triggerless detector. So all detectors, they have a continuous readout, okay? The limitation is on the maximum interaction rate that we can deal with. That is set precisely by the temp rejection chamber, which, you know, it's maybe I can show a picture. Yeah, okay, well, I don't have, but essentially, is this detector here? It's a large cylinder, 5 meters of diameter, 5 meters of length. It's a large gas volume, divided in two volumes by a central membrane, with a high voltage plane at 100 kilovolts, which together with a set of electrodes attached to the walls of the TPC create a field, an homogeneous, a constant field, pointing towards the central electrode. So what happens, so the collisions take place at the axial center of the temp rejection chamber. So imagine this tens of thousands of particles crossing the volume in each collision of two nuclei, which leave a trail of charge in the gas. The ions drift towards the central electrode, but they are very slow. You know, they are collected in a time of milliseconds. And therefore, now if you have interactions happening at rates, at high rates, then it will really build up a space charge in the TPC volume. And this creates very large distortions of the electric field. And so the maximum we can correct for our distortions at the level of a few tens of centimeters. This is one limitation. The other limitation is that we will be able to pile up, let's say, up to the signal of up to five collisions. Well, I did not mention that the electrons are collected in 100 microseconds, okay? So at 10 kilohertz, you would have, on average, one event in the TPC volume. The maximum rate expected at the LHC is 50 kilohertz, so this goes up to five lead-lead, the signal of five lead-lead collisions in the TPC volume. And that produces an occupancy of the detector in the innermost region, which is 50%. Beyond that, okay, you're not able to do a proper reconstruction of the trajectory of the charged particles, okay? So in other words, so it's nice. For the first time, there is a temp rejection chamber operated, well, at least at the collider configuration, operated without any gating in a continuous way, but also that will soon come to a limitation, which is about 50 kilohertz. Now, let me mention, since I've been coordinating this project for 10 years that when I started, the people that invented the TPC and operated the first TPC, they told me, forget about it, it will never work. Okay, at the LHC with these occupancies, it would be impossible. They're actually very proud that we have shown that a TPC works very well. It's challenging, but it works very well.
I've always some more basic question about fundamentals, and in this case, there also have been lectures about neutron star mergers, and your subject is also an investigation of the QCD state. Now, how far away do you think you are from each other? I mean, it's obvious that the circumstances are very different, temperatures, densities, and all. But do you feel that what is found in the neutron star mergers is also of relevance for what you're investigating, or do you say no, this is not really my field?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There's certainly a lot of, let me call it, crosstalk between these two domains in many respects. We have seen that essentially the approach for developing the equation of state is similar. There are also some of the measurements we perform that are relevant inputs for modeling the merging of neutron stars, and in particular regarding also the measurement of hyperons, you know, the possibility to form a bound states to explain the high density in neutron stars. So that is really the overlap between the two domains. Yes. Exactly. That is. So that is precisely the main, it was shown also earlier. Ah, okay. So, right, so at the LHC energies, we are essentially studying baryon symmetric matter, okay? We had before the program at RIC, where they can actually, with the beam energy scan, try to investigate this region. But yes, with the neutron star, we are really on the other side of the phase diagram.
I'm sorry, I wasn't there yesterday to listen to your talk. May I ask you a question about the complementarity of the future electron-ion collider at Brookhaven with respect to our ALICE experimental program, also in terms of time scale?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly one very important part of our program is to understand the initial conditions, okay? I was trying to discuss this yesterday, but essentially the phenomenology which emerges from these collisions is strongly influenced by the distribution of nuclear matter. And we have some handles to study this at the LHC, but with great limitations. And that is where really the electron-ion collider will provide fundamental inputs for the continuation of the program at the LHC. So that is really from the scientific point of view. Then from the more, say, experimental or technological point of view, there are certainly very strong synergies, and actually plans for developing some of the ALICE3 detectors in a close collaboration with the electron-ion collider community.
Thank you very much. I think we should continue now. So thank the speaker again.